I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Scotland march closer to another major tournament, which will soon be ten a penny. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Wednesday, the 8th of September. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Luke Moore.
And that is the top story, but it's not the top story, is it, gents?
What, that I'm Luke Moore?
You're very insistent on being Luke Moore, though.
I was. I just got into it. Do you know what happened? I thought,
character.
I've got to do my name in a minute. I've just finished this bit, and it came. And I was like, Luke Moore, God, do it.
Do you sometimes forget?
No, but I
it's like a character you put on, isn't it, to come to the Ramble?
Now we know what the tattoo means.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not like this in real life. No, I'm actually all right.
What's the top story, Andy Brassel?
What is the top story? Would you say it's Andy Brassel 5, Luke Moore 3? Would you say that?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to get involved, frankly.
Yeah, so those who don't know, although we trailed it, I think, those that don't know, Andy and I went to Plough Lane last night, which I bloody enjoyed. First time visiting Plough Lane in its new stadium, obviously, on the site of the old dog track in Wimbledon. And
yes.
Yeah, it's cool.
I did like that old place.
Do you know what? It's great. It's actually great. Really, really cool stadium. Great place to go and watch football. An interesting size of crowd as well for the game, but yeah. Then again, Pompey were in town, so it makes sense.
I hope you're not diminishing the meaning of the Papa John's Trophy. To
I would never do that.
The Brackets millions Group J.
out there.
I only went there. I only went there. Southern Division Group J. I only went there for free pizza, which didn't manifest itself. But what can you do?
It did feel like there were a lot of fans there who were new from the area. Which
that's
was quite,
so nice.
Which was quite nice.
Yeah,
and I do think, community embracing it.
And I do think wherever possible, and obviously as Kate said, we'll come on to the old World Cup qualifiers in a minute. But wherever possible, we should talk about the actual football as much as we can. Mm. So we thought we'd mention it today. It was an amazing game, and 5-3 doesn't tell the whole story because Portsmouth went a goal down inside a minute. Which is,
pretty standard.
It's a traditional thing to do down the South Coast. I mean, it's just part of our culture. and then 2-0 down, and then roared back to 3-2, to which made me very arrogant on the Ramble Instagram, as you'd expect. And then Wimbledon roared back themselves to finish at 5-3.
Some would say you created the last three Wimbledon goals with that post of me with the shades on.
Yeah. And can I also say, to sum up the evening in one sentence, we're in the club shop because Andy's bought a couple of shirts for his boys. And he said to me, just almost like whimsically, I never thought I'd see AFC Wimbledon in the AFL trophy. And I just said, I never thought I'd see Pompey in there, but for entirely opposite reasons.
And that is what I was so interested about. And I assume this is, were you going for fun or you're doing an at the match, are you?
No, we were going for fun.
Oh, you're going for fun. Yeah. Oh, no, okay. I was excited.
There's no at the match episodes
To finally be invited along, because obviously I wasn't last night. But anyway, I thought it was quite interesting as a fan experience, as a fan dynamic, because obviously your lot, Wimbledon, sort of delighted to be in League One and be playing in these kind of trophies.
Mm, yeah.
And Portsmouth are just, you know, disgusted at the situation.
Well, it's
endless
interesting
hellscape.
Yeah.
Because being a Wimbledon fan, it's just a constant stream of, I can't believe we're in the same division as these.
Yeah.
But with Portsmouth and actually with Sunderland, it's begun to wear off a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they've been there for a while now.
Yeah. Yeah. And
Ipswich, I think you've still just about got a bit of that.
Yeah. But Portsmouth did make a lot of changes last night. They had an emergency lone goalkeeper in there as well. Wimbledon's goalkeeper is about 5'6", by the way.
Amazing.
First professional game. Zaki Uwala, because he has been the training goalkeeper for 7 years, and this year they gave him a contract to be the backup goalkeeper.
That is gorgeous.
And you know
it's amazing,
even,
right?
Even cuter, Andy and his mates sponsor him.
How do you mean?
They pay a few hundred quid a season, right? And you get him in the programme.
Do you have that stand-up picture of Andy Brassel on his chest?
It's on the programme.
That is a great idea. You're missing a revenue stream here at AFC Wimbledon.
In real community clubs like Wimbledon, that's not even a dig, and I think they still do it at Portsmouth as well. You can sponsor a player to be in the programme, to have your presence in the programme.
Yeah.
You get like a dinner at the end of the season, right?
Yeah, and they give you their signed shirt and all that sort of bizzle.
It's a nice thing.
There's something in it for Brass as well. It's not just...
His shirt will be fitted... I mean, it'll fit Andy's son, his shirt. He's so small.
Oh, bless him. Lots of changes in the game between Austria and Scotland last night, which was final score 1-0 Scotland. Lyndon Dyke's penalty, enough to win that one. It was great. It was a great fighting game, wasn't it? And it looked as though Scotland, they played, 3 games in 6 days. Totally grueling. Ridiculous, you'd say.
Yes, absolutely grueling, for sure.
And they did extremely well.
And their regeneration has been about getting results on the road, really, hasn't it? You know, you look at Serbia and, you know, it's pretty impressive. If you look at them player for player, there is no way on God's green earth that Scotland should be beating Austria.
It's a great point.
Because it's a good set of players. So it's a really incredible result. Obviously, Franco Foda, the Austria coach. I mean, it's not one of those really difficult ramble ones where, like, you know, Harry Kane says he's going to stay 5 minutes after we publish. But I bet you Franco Foda, the Austria coach, is gone by the time we're out of here.
Right.
Nice. Okay.
You were saying that to me yesterday. And really, what Scotland have needed to do, because Denmark are out of sight, good team. Mm. Still, weirdly, even still underrated now for some reason. Still,
yeah,
fantastic
5-0
team.
5-0 win last night,
exactly.
Just to seal
exactly.
it all. Yeah.
Kate, they've picked up exactly where they left off the summer, and they're a good team. It's not a coincidence. They scored 22 goals and conceded none so far, and they had a brilliant tournament in the summer. So Scotland need to make themselves best positioned to come second place in that group, and by beating Austria away, that's a massive step towards it.
Huge.
But I mean, and why are Austria so bad? I don't understand why they've found it so difficult in this group. They've had some really poor results. They got battered at home by Denmark. They lost at home to Scotland, obviously, as we've said. It's some really weird results.
But I felt this way going into the Euros, that they weren't going to be up to much. And out of nowhere, they pulled out a couple of decent performances, including the one against Italy, of course, where they went out, because especially in the second half of that, they were really, really good. But on the whole, They've not looked great for a while. They've obviously had an issue where they should best play David Alaba.
Mm.
I tend to think they overthink that a little bit because they've got better players around them than they sometimes give themselves credit for. Mm. So they're just a bit disjointed. And it was all happening in the set pieces at both ends. And Scotland got the best of that with that sort of Hinteregger wrestle, wasn't it?
So weird.
So that was a really interesting...
That gave away the penalty.
It's a really interesting passage
hands
of play.
On the shoulders, yeah. Wasn't it? Really?
And two hands on one shoulder.
It was a proper VAR penalty, for sure. And there's a similar thing the other end, which wasn't looked at, which is odd. But that's always going to be the case. I mean, you can't. But what I found funny... So, first of all, I really want to credit Shea Adams. Proper handful, brilliant international striker. Yeah. It's no coincidence that he was excellent last night. He's just so difficult to deal with. Obviously, he was the guy who wins the penalty as well. But the co-commentator, I don't know who it was. The co-commentator, when he saw that the decision might be to VAR... look at this thing for a penalty. He starts talking about what Hinteregger's been doing. And then he just can't resist it. When the referees look at the screen, he just goes, go on, give it us. Yes! Like that. It was like Limmy had gone into the commentary box for like a couple of seconds.
It was so good because he was saying he spent the whole of the run-up to it saying, oh yeah, no, that's not really a penalty, is it?
Go on, like, give it us.
Come on. There were some good little saves at both ends. A good one in the 78th minute when they were battling from Craig Gordon for Scotland to keep that clean sheet.
The Craig Gordon thing's interesting, isn't it?
Go on,
because
he pops up with big saves for them.
He does, and it's funny because I guess we don't talk about Scottish football that much on here. It's been one of those things that's occurred to me at the start of the season. I'm interested to know how... I know some Celtic fans feel like this. The fact that they moved on from Craig Gordon... they've not got anyone better to replace him. And he's still a really, really good goalkeeper who, as you say, makes really important saves.
It's
been a problem position for Celtic.
It has. But if you look at Scotland, they've had great goalkeepers. I mean, really consistently crossed. I mean, obviously there's going to be exceptions to that. But he seems to pop up time and time again with big saves for them. Obviously, he's club captain at Hearts now. Which is a big responsibility, and as he's a senior pro, you'd expect him to kind of flourish in that role. But Scotland have got good players throughout, really. You talk about Austria being player for player much better than Scotland. I mean, I do understand what you mean. I know Austria were missing Sabitzer last night, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big miss.
They had quite a few missing.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player.
But still, you look at the players that are in that team, and they're all good Bundesliga players, plus Alaba, plus Arnautovic.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. But Scotland have got, you know, Shannon's a real hand for that level.
Lyndon Dykes, I love watching him.
He seems to really enjoy playing for Scotland.
And he got the most out of properly leathering that penalty, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yeah. McGinn is a good Premier League player.
Yes.
Gilmore's a really exciting prospect, one of the best young prospects around. You know, there's Tierney, there's Robertson, there's players all over the place there. I don't really think it's too ambitious to say, particularly what's happened with Austria, and of course Scotland have played their part in that by beating them away, that Scotland should be gunning for that second place in that group. They really should. I think now the position they're in, they've got Denmark to play, obviously, but they play them at home. They've got Israel at home. And they go away. The two away games are really winnable. Faroes and Moldova. So yeah, they've got to be going for second.
Always comes down to Scotland, Israel, doesn't it?
Oh, it does seem to.
Always.
It does seem to.
But what's back in the Faroes?
And a Portugal
player. What's the Faroes perspective? That was going to be my question.
I was going to say, always come down to Scotland, Israel, or a Portugal playoff game. Portugal are always in the playoffs. Sorry. Yeah.
But the reason I mentioned the saves is because, you know, got to give some credit to Watford's Daniel Bachmann. Lovely save off that Lyndon Dykes header in the first 10 minutes, but he did have one of those moments where he kicked the turf instead of the ball when he was trying to make a clearance.
Happens to the best of us.
Nearly damaged his own knee.
Also, I do think it's really about the penalty, isn't it? Which was the decisive bit in the game. I mean, it's not often that you see a penalty scored where you blame the goalkeeper, but that was one of them.
There we go.
Boo. Mm. All right then. Well, congratulations. Oh, also before we move on, nice to see Paul McGinn get his debut for Scotland at the age of 30.
Yeah.
The Hibs defender.
Yeah. The McGinn brothers are outstripping the McGann brothers.
I was going to say. I'm pretty sure Marcus has got a story about... Oh no, it's not Marcus. Someone I know has got a story about the McGann brothers. Can't say on the air. I don't know why I mentioned this. Sorry, carry on. Carry on.
Thank you for self-editing.
No worries.
That saves us a lot of time.
Makes
actually
it easier for the guys.
Yeah. It's a team effort here at the round.
Congratulations, Scotland. 1-0 final score there. Ireland 1-1 with Serbia Milinkovic-Savic after 20 minutes, little own goal, and then
Milenkovic with an 87th minute equaliser.
I mean, there is no
thank you for that, gents.
Way, there is no way that Ireland was scoring apart from that goal. Really,
it was an absolute pinball effort. he basically just said, "I could control in a controlled manner clear this, or I could absolutely traction engine it as hard as possible," which he decided to do, and it obviously looped up and went back in over his own goalkeeper. But for the Milinkovic-Savic header, Pazunu in the Ireland goal, who's playing for Portsmouth at the moment, obviously, yeah, which is why we had to use an emergency loan keeper last night. Another story, but anyway,
saved 10 shots though.
He had a brilliant game, and he made some amazing, brilliant saves. He made the best non-save I think I've seen in about 15 years from that header. Did you see his effort to save it?
Yeah.
It came flying out of nowhere, got a hand to it. It's still just about winning. It would have been one of the best saves you've ever seen. If you haven't seen it and you're listening, you should go back and watch it because it was fantastic to watch. Just a brilliant effort. It was like he was so passionate about saving every single shot that he even almost saved that one. But the header was too good.
Yeah. I mean, it's lovely to see.
Even though they got a hiding for a lot of that game, Republic of Ireland.
Yeah.
It's hard to begrudge them, especially after what happened against Portugal away, where they were so close to what would have been an incredible result. It's interesting listening to Miguel Delaney, friend of the show, in recent days, saying, you know, there's a lot of talk back in Ireland that, you know, it could be like a Sam Allardyce getting offered the job next up or whatever. But whereas that would improve results in the short term, it would be a swerve off this sort of development path that they're on.
Oh, bringing in the youngsters, things like that. Because, of course, yeah, Stephen Kenny now still hasn't won a competitive game in 12 attempts.
And I think, Andy, you're right there, but I also think there's another aspect of that conversation, which is that success breeds success as well, though. So the other dimension to that kind of development phase is you need to give the players and the team and the fans and everyone an experience of some kind of success, yeah, even if it's just a little taste of the biscuit, right?
You've never watched a Philadelphia 76, have you?
No, I haven't. Not really. No, not really.
That's Luke's personal motto, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Trust the process, mate. Trust the process.
Success breeds success is my motto. But anyway, the point being that your Republic of Ireland need to get into a position where they, and that's easier said than done, but they can start to build up a little bit of momentum. And the opportunity is something like the Euros, because it's an expanded competition now. It is objectively far easier to qualify for. And then they need to somehow qualify for a tournament like that and then build on that going forward. It's not dissimilar, although they've got better players, in terms of a profile of nation. It's not that dissimilar to Denmark. I mean, in terms of on paper.
I know. You look at the talent that's available at the moment. That is the biggest problem. That is the biggest problem with Ireland.
But that's a cyclical thing. Denmark aren't always going to have those players. They're not always going to have that because they're not a profile nation that would. My point being that, you know, Republic of Ireland needs... I can't remember who it was that said it, but someone was saying that Ireland or a nation of that size, they need to be able to go and be completely ruthless home and away against teams like Azerbaijan, Luxembourg. And then they need to back themselves to have a big night at home against Serbia or a big occasion at home to Portugal and get something.
That is fine. As things stand, they simply do not have the players for that.
That's true. And also, the other thing you're right, but what I would also say that they've been a bit unlucky in the draw, because depending on what draw you get, you can get two pretty good teams, and they've got two pretty good teams here. I know Serbia aren't amazing, but they're better than Ireland.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can see a nation that only's got really one other big team to compete with.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's it with Serbia. They're sort of in the Austria place. If you go back a few years, you know, lots of talent, but, you know, no cohesive plan. Whereas they're a little bit nearer that now.
And they weren't in it, and they didn't just really, really deserve to get too much out of the game. Just very quickly, finally, I take Andy's point about the players, but Northern Ireland have achieved a lot with not much, with respect to them. And I don't see why Republic of Ireland can't do the same.
Elsewhere, Turkey lost 6-1.
Andy Brussels, Turkey, okay. Use their full name, please. He will be forever
Netherlands.
Can I just point
Andy,
out...
Andy, what are your thoughts on your favourite team?
My thoughts, some of you mugs, Adam has dark horses for the Euros.
Stop that.
If you look out...
It's because we trust you. I can't believe you're sitting there looking us in the face and taking the piss out of us for having trust in you, Andy Brussels.
Look at the predictors. Look at the predictors.
This man is a monster. He's an absolute monster.
So at the very best, you've sold us a doozy there. You've sold us down the river by saying Turkey and then choosing someone else.
Misinformation,
simply a lesson on backing your own judgment.
Can I just say that game last night, Netherlands, there's a lot to enjoy there. The first two Netherlands goals were amazing. Absolutely amazing. And only slightly tempered by the fact that for the rest of the game, Turkey looked like they'd never even played the game before.
I mean, that is the thing. Those opening two goals were excellent, but the sort that normally, when you're playing five-a-side, a team much better than you scores against you right near the end of the game.
Yeah.
When everyone's knackered and dispirited.
Giving up.
Not in the first minute.
Yeah, and no, it's true. And also we have Louis van Gaal back, which is just amazing.
It's pretty
It's just
wonderful.
Great to have him back. And it's also great to have, because I believe, Andy, you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that he had to field some questions leading up to the game about his negative kind of style and stuff. And you can just imagine how smug he was having 1-6-1 after that. It's just great.
Well, he was pretty smug before it, wasn't he?
I think that might be a major part of a major character attribute. I don't think that's related.
I don't think
that's related to the game in hand. Turkey's night sort of summed up a little bit by the player who tried to, you know, gob on the floor and accidentally spat on himself.
Yeah, it can happen.
I mean, what's going to happen with the management at Turkey now, Andy?
Well, the problem is, Senyor Gyunyes is expensive to sack. That's the issue, because he was one of the best paid coaches at the Euros.
You said, I remember,
and they
yeah.
were clearly the worst coach team at the Euros. So it's a huge problem for them. But why are we talking about them when we could be talking about Memphis?
I know, hat-trick.
Yeah, sorry,
I
mean, let's talk about Memphis.
We were talking earlier off air about the fact that replacing Messi is the absolute impossible task. But if there's ever a man who's not going to be overawed by it, because
Memphis.
He's so convinced of his own greatness, it's Memphis.
Well, he's now tied with Johan Cruyff, Barcelona's Johan Cruyff, on 33
it's,
goals.
It's so. The second most impressive hat-trick of the night after Ellis Harrison's at Plough Lane last night, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a chipped penalty involved, though?
That was a great pen. It was Memphis's Panenka was, I would say, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Panenka's, as I've said on this show over and over again, but that was one of the best executions, because he brings through the conceit right to the last minute. It was very, very well executed, I have to say.
It was a great
performance by Netherlands.
That's at the heart of a Panenka, though, is your ability to act.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's
actually where they fall down normally.
When the goalkeeper basically isn't fooled by them, essentially. Yeah. But for me, the best and most underrated penalty technique, and I've mentioned this, I still don't think people talk about it enough, is James Milner's way he takes penalties, where he shapes up to curl it in the bottom right corner with his right foot. On purpose and disguised, he hits it with his heel, so it goes the other way. You should watch it in slow motion. It's amazing. And it always fools absolutely everyone. I don't even think I've seen commentators talk about it, because it's so, you can only really tell when you see a proper slow motion replay.
It's like
from
a
behind.
Microaggression.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
If you like, it's amazing. It is amazing. And I would recommend people go and find it.
He is the sort of man who would do a microaggression, isn't he?
Nah. He's a good lad, James Milner.
Oh, yeah. I'm not arguing with that. But if you look at him, he looks so, like, nice.
Yeah.
But it's like, as well, you don't imagine he's as muscly as he is. But he is. Like, when he swaps shirts at the end, he's like...
Oh, he looks... No, his whole face is muscly. What are you on about?
He's totally...
He looks like he's worked out his jaw.
He's on a different level of chiseled. It's Ned Flanders cutting the heads. It's incredible.
Honourable mention for Lee Carsley, taking charge of his first game as England under 21's boss. They got a 2-0 win over Kosovo. Rian Brewster scored and started.
Which is amazing, because, I mean, Rian Brewster's a name you feel like you've heard for a very long time, and he's still only 21. I mean, he takes absolutely no pleasure at all in scoring goals for his club. But good for him for getting a goal.
He takes no pleasure in scoring goals for his club. Well, it's lucky he doesn't score.
He just doesn't do it.
Glad to give him a little. Glad to give the young man a wee dig on the back of his goal for his country. Thanks for that, Luke. More probably time to get to a break after this. We'll be heading into the Agony Aunt files. See you in a minute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I read something, some quote from the worst manager in the history of the Premier League, Frank de Boer, 7 matches, 7 defeats, 0 goals, where he was saying that it's not good for Marcus Rashford to have a coach like me. If he was coached by Frank, he would learn how to lose. Because he lost every game.
It's just so good.
It always makes me smile, even though there's so many conflicting emotions. Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Me, Andy and Luke in your ears today. And now you get another run out of this little nugget.
If you've seen Vishnu Kebab Shop or Dean Smith up a tree, if your dad chinned a referee, send us an email, please. If you put Messi on a 2-shirt, if you sold our Arteta cheese, if you've got something for us, showfootballramble.com.
Ooh! I'd like to rank those things. I'd like our listeners to rank those things in order of likelihood of happening. But I'd also like to say that we probably shouldn't be encouraging people's dads to punch referees.
No, that's true.
That feels a little bit of a dereliction duty to me.
I initially had it as shinned rather than chinned. And I was very confused.
No, but Pete's not encouraging it. He's saying,
it's just if you have already done it.
If it's happened. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
If you've seen it.
So we can
and it wasn't
it.
Your fault.
So we can
and
condemn
we condemn it.
And
listen, we're very sensible.
Let's make it absolutely clear. Every single person in the Ramble has seen Vishnu Kebab Shop. right, shall I start the emails? Do you want me to go first?
Let's do it.
Patrick, hello to you, Patrick. Very, very welcome here. Welcome along. He says, my tiny, quiet family cat passed away in March.
Oh, God.
So we adopted a rescue street cat from Abu Dhabi. Our new cat is very happy here, a bit too happy. He's fought off every other cat in the neighbourhood. Fair enough. There his words. But now he has taken to jumping into other people's houses, fighting their cats in their own home, and then stealing their cat's food. He scared a couple of cats out of their own homes. Our cat is 8 kilos of pure muscle. And even though we feed him constantly, he's not gaining any weight. I guess fighting keeps you in shape. How do I tell the neighbours that their cats need to toughen up without being hexed eternally by the local cat lady coven?
Is that the message here? Is that the answer? Their cats, the local other cats, need to toughen up?
Well, it's so funny because I've got two cats and they're both fat now, and they're both fat because other people keep feeding them and there's not much you can do about it.
Has this put a new spin on it that they might be stealing the food themselves rather than being fed?
I'm pretty sure there's a lady over the back of the house who feeds them.
Right.
Out of choice.
When I went round there to help remove a tree, that's another story.
Did she write in a few weeks ago?
It's a different tree.
Patreon.com/footballramble, ladies and gentlemen.
She said to me, oh, I've been feeding your cats.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Like, because anyway, you can't look after them.
The point I was going to make is the one thing you can do is that you can get a cat flap that syncs up to their microchip so no other cats can get in your house. So if these people
it's like a digital bouncer.
Yeah.
You have to sync it. You have to hold your cat under and sync it. It's amazing. If they all did that, there'd be no problem here. And 8 kilos, can I just say, look, there's a couple of things very, very quickly. One of my cats, I think, is just under 7 kilos and he's a bit fat, and the other one's about 6, not so bad. The problem I have is that when I go into the vet for their annual checkup and I say, I'm not feeding them too much, someone else is feeding them, I can see the vet looking at me going, yeah, you're a bit fat, so you probably have that same standard to your cats, and not believing me. Right?
I think that might be projection, Lee. You're looking very well.
Thank you very much. The second point I'd just like to make is that get the old wireless cat flap, sync it up to your cats, no other cats can get in.
So what, you think he should not only his cats beating up all the other cats, he's also going to go around like some sort of door-to-door salesman on a commission and be like, you need a better cat flap, you loser.
Yeah, it's about 70 quid, that cat flap as well, so it's not cheap.
I think probably the alternative and possibly cheaper way of dealing with it, you know that bit in Back to the Future where Biff Tannen is about to get Marty, who's come back from the future?
Yeah.
Just dump a load of horse manure on the muscly cat,
because
that's how you deal with a muscly bully.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I've heard that you can go to the local zoo and get lion dung.
Ooh.
And put that around the bottom of your garden to stop foxes coming in, because they think there's a predator in the area.
Interesting. This is from Chris Edwards, an Aussie out in China. Given the positive COVID situation in China, I have something of a conundrum to ask of you all. There is a 7-day holiday coming up where people are unusually not planning on travelling around the country. My wife wants to go to a small mountainous area, which would be lovely and quiet. I am tempted to do that, but I would like to travel around the country to potentially watch 4 different matches in 4 different stadiums around the country. Should I agree with the wife or go on a massive football trip?
I think it's a hearts and minds situation this here, isn't it?
I mean,
he needs to work a bit harder. He can't just be like, oh yeah, we've got to go to these 4 like football grounds. Like, tell her a story. Tell her what we need to get. Why? Why do you want to go there? Get her listening to the ramble. Get her on board.
I think there might be quite a lot of meaning in this following sentence. My wife wants to go to a small mountainous area, which would be lovely and quiet. She's not said she wants you to be there, Chris, to be absolutely fair. So, I mean, there might be a hint in that. I'd like to go to a small mountainous area that would be lovely and quiet.
Yeah, that's right. Quiet.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I would probably, I think Kate's right. Hearts and minds. My wife would particularly love to go to 4 different matches in 4 different stadiums. She loves going to live sport. So, I mean, perhaps you can sell it in. Perhaps you've got to do your bit, as you say, to win the heart and mind of your wife.
I read something on the BBC a couple of days ago about a guy, you know that walk I did in Spain along the Camino? Some dude did a bit of it as well and ended up in somewhere around where we were, Santander, and fell in love with a League 3 team and started following them to all of their games despite living in Manchester. So it could happen. She could come with you on your trip and end up being an obsessive super fan.
It can happen. Absolutely could happen. What would you prefer to do, Kate? I think I'd probably got to go to the small mountainous area, which would be lovely and quiet.
But you do work in football, don't you?
It's
a bit of a busman's holiday.
It depends. Do fans get paid at the same level as players in China? Because if they do, I'm definitely up for going.
It seems unlikely, Andy. I mean, it seems unlikely.
Right, okay. Maybe
keep
not
sending them in on when for your Wednesday shout-out, the Diego Costa cat and the confusing holiday trip. We love to hear them. And if you've got any questions, email us, show@footballramble.com, or tweet us at Football Ramble. Now, guys, we all love the World Cup. We all love international football. Well, some of us far more than others. And the great news is there's going to be even more of it, people. Arsene Wenger has had a wonderful idea about having a World Cup every 2 years. And everyone's in on it. And it was proposed, apparently, originally by the Saudi Arabian Football Authority. Don't know if that's got any significance at all, Brass. But, what do we think?
Well, do we think it's Arsenal's fault for hoying him out and he's basically taking it out on the rest of us?
Yeah, if we can make this somehow be Arsenal's fault, that's fine by me.
I think Arsene Wenger's legacy is an incredible one, and he's very well respected in the game, and rightly so. But he needs to do less of this because it's going to hurt him.
The thing is, he's a great pundit.
He's a great pundit.
Let's just leave him doing that.
The really odd thing is that he said something like, "Every fan, fans think that this is a great idea." And last night, loads and loads of national fan groups have come out together, teamed up across 6 confederations, 6 different areas of the world, issuing a joint statement opposing this completely.
Yeah.
And as they say, which I think is a great point, you know, I'm not one who's like, oh, we must never change anything. You know, I like a bit of jazzing things up and being interesting. That's fine. But as they say, the World Cup has taken place every 4 years since the inaugural tournament was held in Uruguay in 1930. What are we doing?
Yeah, Andy, it's a really good point, and I completely agree with you, Kate. Andy, people who listen to this show will probably be bored of me kind of drawing this narrative that every kind of big ticket thing that UEFA or FIFA do seems to be the latest skirmish and a battle between them for control of football, right?
Yes.
Would you say this is an example of this, or am I kind of overstating
that? No, I don't think that's unreasonable. And I think it would not be a surprise to me if this was simply a way of trying to sneak through as a compromise, in inverted commas, an expanded Club World Cup.
Yeah,
that would not surprise me at all. Although Wenger does seem sincerely invested in this. And after a summer where we've had, like, really, I know Messi won his international tournament and all the rest of it, but the Copa America, I thought, was a thoroughly depressing watch, especially cast against the Euros with no fans in a country that is not in shape to host it in a public health sense at all. It was like the most pointless football tournament that I can remember. Really, and I remember the Mercantile Cup at Wembley. So it's really disappointing. Also, I don't really want to put Arsene Wenger in a box with Florentino Perez. But in this of all years, I think we're all pretty suspicious about old guys telling young people what they should want from football.
Absolutely.
And telling fans what they should want from football with, let's be fair, at best, minor anecdotal evidence.
Well, Florentino Perez would probably presume that if he did get in the box of Arsene Wenger, it would be, what, 20 years after he wanted him? Finally, I've got you. I think also we need to have a note for the players. I mean,
this is the core of it.
You've got to be siding with Jurgen Klopp and his point on it, where, you know, I think sometimes Jurgen Klopp makes that point for his own kind of fairly selfish ends, which you'd expect. Fair enough, I've got no problem with that. But overall, you have to say, you know, something's got to give here. You can't expect the sport to keep getting more and more intensive, more and more demands physically and mentally placed on football players, and maintain the status quo. The example of the players that Wenger used for his argument that are in favour,
all retired.
So
no shit.
So and I do think there's a reason that it's. I don't think you have to be some kind of old fashioned kind of fusty conservative to say there's a reason this is every 4 years. You know, there's a reason the Olympics is every 4 years. It's supposed to be the pinnacle. It's supposed to be something that's really genuinely special, and you remove some of the specialness from it.
And also, I think we're in a position where we're like quite close to removing a lot of the specialness from football as well. And I'm not talking necessarily about the geopolitical element of it, although that is important. But in terms of the actual football, what's actually happening on the pitch and the spectacle that we all want, look what COVID has done to football. And the response of football to that at large has been not, let's take a step back. From the moment, I've said this before, but I think it's worth saying again, from the moment like that we go back to Liverpool versus Atletico Madrid in the Champions League, where it shouldn't have happened, and there should have been a sense of, you know, we need to do something.
Of exactly.
The fact that we have too
being
much
grown up.
We have too much football, and that is because that is why we cannot react to real events.
Yeah.
Because there is not any time to do that. Therefore, we are playing too much football. The response to that last season was, let's play the same amount of football in less time.
Mm. Oh, brass. They cancelled a few replays.
It's not good for that. Thank goodness we didn't get penalties in the Papa John's last night. You know, you think it's not good for the players. It's not good for the fans. It's just not good for anyone apart from the people who are wanting to monetize the television side of it.
All the evidence suggests that you get injured more often at this level of competition.
And ultimately, exactly.
Quantity, I mean.
And you're more likely to get injured the more intense pressure you put your body under. That's why it seems a little bit odd, and there are other reasons for it, but that's partly the reason why players will come off with 10 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go, because the layman will think, well, you've played 75 minutes, why can't you play 90? Because you're far more likely to get injured when your body's under stress because you're tired.
And if you can't relax and you can't rest, which is what would happen if there's yet another...
Can I also add something just very, very quick that we haven't mentioned, which is the idea that it's also an inherently arrogant position from FIFA, and I'll tell you why, because they've taken for granted the idea that the World Cup next year will be a success, because if the World Cup really has always been a success, generally speaking, it's always got bigger and bigger. Now, you can talk about, say, the quality of football in 1990 or the social political aspect of 2010 or whatever, but ultimately the World Cup has always kind of grown and grown and grown. they shouldn't take for granted that next year's World Cup will be a success.
I agree. And like compared to its usual settings, I mean, it's almost in a village setting. When you look at the size
of the
country.
That's a weird time of year for the football calendar generally.
Yeah, compared to Russia and Brazil, which, you know, all other questions aside, have great football histories and football is passionately followed all over an absolutely enormous country. It's a totally different context. And that's without the even change in terms of time of year.
And they weren't, in terms of Brazil, you know, that wasn't a total, that was maybe a success in the moment, but it wasn't a success subsequently in terms of what happened to the stadiums. Yeah, the
legacy's a mess.
The legacy and people, you know, why have we spent all this money when we're suffering? Someone who's been speaking about this is the Finland captain, Tim Sparv, who has written a pretty impressive piece, I thought, in the Players Tribune.
Yeah. It's brilliant, yeah.
About the situation in Qatar and basically using his position to call for other people in his position to use their positions to talk about something that's deeply significant, which is the human rights record in the country that is going to host the World Cup next year. He talked about how Finland went to a camp there in January for training. And this is a quote from the essay. "It seems crazy that while migrant workers were suffering and even dying in Qatar, I was worrying about the distance between our midfield and our defence." And he says he's also recently been speaking to a group of migrant workers to try and educate himself. I think, you know, as you guys know, I lived there for a couple of years and I remember arriving in May when there's a lot of misinformation. We talked before about the weather and there's a lot of misinformation about how hot it's going to be. It's going to be a normal temperature when the World Cup is played. That's why it's been moved there. It's going to be about 20 degrees, about the same sort of temperature as Russia was, or possibly quite a little bit colder. But in the summer, it is 50 degrees.
Yeah.
And in May when I arrived, it would have been 42, maybe 45. And I remember turning up to the hotel and everywhere was a building site pretty much. And there was just a massive hole in the ground next to where I was staying. Brilliant. They obviously valued me pretty highly, popping me in that one. And there were people working through the night, because that's when it's marginally colder, but it's still 42, you know, it's still within the range. All these workers just working outdoors in 50 degree heat. Now that's just obviously anecdotal, and that these figures that Tim Sparv quotes, 6,500 deaths that were reported in the Guardian. You know, these are heavily contested by the authorities running this World Cup, of course. But just anecdotally watching that, you know, I didn't find it very possible to go outdoors in 50 degrees heat, let alone lug bits of concrete around. Mm.
So, it's a really tricky situation. Of course, the conditions there clearly are highly problematic, and the numbers can be contested or whatever. I know you're not saying this, but you know the numbers that have been put out there are being put out there by kind of credible human rights organisations who do a lot of good work around the world.
And even if you shaved a bit off, it's still way beyond an acceptable level.
It's also the system as well, right? The system where, you know, it's a sponsorship. Is it called the kafala system? The sponsorship system where you go to Qatar for the express reason to have a job that someone's given you. And then that really opens workers up to exploitation, because essentially they're reliant on that employer for everything. And they can, you know, behave in various different unacceptable ways, to say the least, and make it very, very difficult for those workers, which is, you know, an understatement, but you understand what I mean. The issue, I think, which is really interesting, is that if you took about this from a football point of view, it's not difficult to imagine we've got, you know, just over a year to go. There could be a bit of a groundswell here, and this is where this links back into what we were talking about earlier, that FIFA shouldn't take for granted the idea that this is going to be successful and that this is going to be acceptable and that people are going to really jump on board with it. I have a huge issue with it personally. Very, very, it's not about me, obviously, but very difficult thing to navigate when you love your job, you love the sport, you look forward to a big tournament, you want to cover it and you want to deliver, you know, for want of a better word.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah, enthusiasm and our take on the games, and that's what we do. Is it easy for us to do that when it's all predicated on the idea that thousands of people are losing their lives? It's awful. Now, there's injustice all over the world, of course, and there's lots of problematic things. Everything's linked to everything else. No one lives in a vacuum. But the next year or so is going to be a very soul-searching one for anyone who loves football. And we shouldn't understate how important that's going to be. And we shouldn't also be able to accurately predict that this tournament, as I said, is going to be successful. And in fact, you could argue it's already not successful because of what's gone on.
Yeah, and I think the players are in a different place now. That's what's important, I think, that players feel empowered and compelled to speak out on stuff directly without going through their clubs, without asking kit sponsors or brands or any of that. They feel they have that direct link through social media. I think a lot of them, if you look at Germany, you look at, you know, Leon Goretzka and Joshua Kimmich, have been doing stuff, mobilizing charity funds. In Goretzka's case, speaking out against political stuff that he's not happy about and receiving quite a lot of pushback from right-wing groups about it as well. I think because of people like him and obviously over here, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, Tim Sparv speaking out on this is great. And this is very, very relevant and very interesting. But I think you're right, Kate. He realizes that players bigger than him.
He even says that in the article. It's quite self-deprecating.
I'm just a nobody.
It's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
He can obviously get people talking about that more in his part of the football community, but it does need people higher up the footballing food chain to talk about it more. And I feel that football and football players are ready for that. Of course, Toni Kroos has talked about this a bit already.
I think that's fair. I do think we have to be careful drawing comparisons with political causes, though, because, you know, I think that the thing that made, for example, Marcus Rashford's campaign successful, or part of it, was not just the fact
it's not
that
party affiliated.
It's not a political point that children should have food. And if you feel that that's a political point, you're probably lost to us anyway. Likewise, it's not a political point that people shouldn't die at work, or people shouldn't be exploited, or human trafficking shouldn't happen. If you have a political view on that, then you're lost to us anyway. So we have to understand that. Yeah, this is about more than politics. I do have a certain, I know we need to move on, but I do have a very certain amount of sympathy for perhaps the people who are governing at the moment, because they've been left this legacy issue with Qatar, and it's difficult to see, it's easy for us to sit here and kind of chip off about it. It's very difficult to see how they would navigate their way out of it without causing a huge amount of problems. But ultimately, if they have to do that, they should prioritise people's lives rather than, you know, the financial benefit or whatever it may be.
They tried to make it more difficult. They tried to make it 48 teams. So anyway, we'll come on to it. We'll continue to talk about it.
Yeah, that's tonight, the least we can do, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Tonight, Poland are facing England. They need a win tonight, effectively, to stop England really sealing top spot in their qualifying group. Lewandowski missed the 2-1 defeat to England at Wembley in March. Head coach Paulo Sousa doesn't seem too optimistic, does he? We want to compete against the best, but we know we don't have the same level as England. If they lose a player, they have two or three of the same level. Here, it's just Robert.
Nice classic bit of Portuguese bluntness there.
Yeah. That'll be a real motivator for the gang.
Jan Bednarek might find that a bit offensive, Luke.
Well, I mean, yeah, fair enough. I mean, I don't think anyone, even with without my affiliation, could say that Bednarek's in the same bracket as Lewandowski. Look, the joke on the side, Lewandowski can hurt England. We all know that. He's, for me, the best number nine in the world. He can also make chances for himself. So, you know, if England aren't at it, they'll get punished, I expect. But you'd expect England to have enough to get through the game tonight, and if they do, they'll qualify for the World Cup. I think they'll qualify for it anyway, but they'll definitely qualify if they win tonight. I think England look like a really coherent, strong unit. They're a bit of a machine now, but that doesn't mean complacency can't set in. It doesn't mean that you can't get unstuck. And when you're playing up against a player that quality, he can do anything. And he's not just a number nine who finishes off chances or who's a deadly finisher.
He can make his own shot.
He makes his own chances.
And he bullies defenders. And he enjoys bullying defenders.
Well,
which is what makes him so good to watch.
All strikers should enjoy bullying defenders. That's just part of it.
Oh, yeah, but Lewandowski,
he loves
the most. He's that cat. That's what
he
is.
He's the Lewandowski cat. Sousa says he knows with the national team he needs to do 4, 5, 6 times more than he does at Bayern. He scored his 70th international goal on Thursday's win against Albania. He says he's better than ever at 33. Age is just numbers, isn't it, Russ?
I also feel like Adam Buxer should get in that mention. New England Revolution's Adam Buxer. He scored a hat-trick against San Marino and also scored against Albania. He's in form as well.
Yeah, good stuff.
Is he an advert for pudding ahead of main course? I don't think so.
No, he isn't.
No,
he isn't. He isn't. Absolutely not. That's what Lewandowski does, apparently.
Jesus Christ.
There's a couple. You'll know more about this than us, Mason. I heard listening to
pudding
this
before me
on the radio. I heard. Seriously, a coincidence as it may be, I heard this morning on the radio a couple of athletes, might have been one of your lot, the old triathletes, talking about how they do reverse eating.
Oof.
Dessert, main course, then starter.
I don't know about this.
Breaks down the sugar more quickly.
I don't know what the science is behind it. I suspect it's probably questionable.
Mrs. Lewandowski is a dietitian.
Is she really?
Yes, that's where it comes
There's
from.
There's the secret, see? Behind every great man.
I think what better moment to plug our Patreon if you enjoy this kind of insight. Or if you like the one we put out on Sunday, you can get more of that stuff on our Patreon. Bonus episodes, ad-free rambles, live streams, and much, much more. Hang out with us. Head over to patreon.com/footballramble. Do it now.
Yeah, we put a Patreon show out on the main feed on Saturday, I think, or Sunday, just to give people a little taste of the biscuit. And it was me and Pete, I think, and Marcus talking about the things that we want to kick out of football. And Pete had thought about it and decided that he wanted to get rid of barcodes, as in the actual barcodes on the turnstiles. That was the main issue for him. There's a job at FIFA waiting for him, I'm telling you. Because that man will fiddle while Ryan burns, like you wouldn't believe.
I need to go and have a lie down and think about that, I think.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's show, it's Marcus, Vish and Andy. You are back. Say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye, Luke.
We'll see you next time. Never gets old, though.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.